This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Angela Gabriel and Amy Lindquist. They are co-directors of Seventh Wave Community Singers. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And so you've got a three-hour workshop coming up on the 14th of May called So You Think You Can't Sing, followed by a six-week series. Those are both at the NIA studio here in Santa Fe. And there's also going to be a drop-in program for people who want to sing. So what's this all about? Is it for people who have never sung before, people who were told to shut up during choir practice in the third grade? What was it about?
We like to say this is for everyone, regardless of what your experience is. But the reason we called it So You Think You Can't Sing is because there's so many people who we might get into a conversation, somehow it goes in the direction of singing, which just happens to happen to us a lot. And they might say, oh, no, trust me, you don't want to hear me sing. Oh, no, well, I can't sing.
Yeah, if I had a dollar every time I heard that.
Really?
This one man, I was at a party, completely not singing-related party, and he found me, and he says, I hear you're a choir director. You can't get me to sing. I said, that's fine. That's cool.
Like, he sought you out.
He sought me out, and not only once. It happened three times.
Same guy.
And, you know, there was beer being consumed, and he got more insistent. And finally, I said, you really want to sing, don't you? And he said, yeah. He said, I used to sing a lot. And this happens with men a lot, is as soon as their voice changes, the young men, that's when the shame kind of buries in. And that's something that we're actively pursuing, is recruiting men back into the fold, because there are so many good songs that need that bottom.
Yeah.
So, but it's amazing the lines that people give me and Angela are very similar. You know, there aren't that many. I'd say there's a handful that I hear all the time.
So a lot of women know what the pickup lines are in this world. You guys know what the singing lines are. What are they? It's like, oh, you trust me, you don't want to hear me. That's one.
I only sing in the shower.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Or in the car. You'll only hear me sing in the car.
That's one. My sister was the singer. A lot of people find me and they say, oh, I hear you have a choir. My daughter is a great singer and I really want her to go. And I said, well, do you like to sing? Yeah, you don't want to hear me. Here comes the line. And then I ask, my next question is always, well, do you like to sing when no one's around? Do you sing in the car or the shower or what? And they say yes. And there's always this kind of shy little thing. And that's what we've created. We've been doing this for 4 years together. It's time flies.
I don't know, a while.
And Angela and I started this probably 5 years ago by myself, and I couldn't get it off the ground. And it was meeting Angela and our enthusiasm together so that we could have it consistent every week, when, you know, we could keep it going. And it's become, we have a core group that show up and sing together. It's become like church, or like, you know, it's their thing in the week where they are with their other humans and singing together, and it's fun and energetic.
And it's profound.
It is. And I was just going to say, another one of the lines that people use a lot is, oh, I'm not as brave as you. Oh, I wish I were that brave. But what I have found for myself, because I come at this not from the place of being a self-identified singer like Amy is that because of doing this, I can be more brave, you know, and I can have built the skills where I can hear other people singing and I can just jump in and have the confidence to just like make a harmony with somebody. Or I didn't do that. I wasn't just this way all the time. These are all skills that we've built. So when people say, oh, I wish I were as brave as you, sometimes just that first step of just stepping in and saying, okay, I'm going to try this. And like Amy likes to say, if you are the person that feels butterflies when you think about going and singing with people, this is for you.
Now, does it help you to be brave in non-musical parts of your life, do you think?
In every part of my life. I believe so.
Yeah.
Right now, talking to you, I feel like my voice has more expression, more life in it.
Because you sing.
Because I sing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way that I use my body to use my voice, whether I'm speaking or singing or yelling out to get someone's attention or any way that I might use my voice, or just humming to myself at night, and whether I how it feels in my body, all those things build my confidence.
How did each one of you get involved in music, get involved in singing, get involved in this voice work?
Well, I grew up in El Rancho in Pewaukee, and my mother said I sang my whole life, and there weren't any choirs or arts programs in Pewaukee at the time. I'm 48, so that was in the 70s and early 80s. And there was a children's choir that came to my school, Dan Sass, I'll never forget him. It was the New Mexico Children's Choir, and they did Peter Rabbit, and I knew it, just lightning hit. And so my mother and my fourth grade teacher, we carpooled, and they brought us to Santa Fe to do this children's choir. My mother has always seen something special in me and supported it. And I've always had adults go, wow. I was early identified as a singer. I was given the solos and stuff from an early age. A funny story is that I auditioned for the Santa Fe Opera for the Magic Flute, and I was convinced I was the alto, I was going to get it. And they didn't even hear us. They wanted boys. So, yeah, and that was interesting. But so I grew up, and I went to Los Alamos following, you know, my singing path, and then I went to Interlochen Arts Academy for my last 2 years and started singing jazz, and then went to college as a jazz vocal major. I went to Boston, and I studied at New England Conservatory. I got into a crew of avant-garde microtonal musicians, which was a lot, in retrospect, I think it was a lot more fun to do than to listen to. Like, there was a lot going on.
There's a lot of 20th century performance of that nature, yes.
Yeah, but I liked the conceptual stuff. I got to sing for John Cage in a John Cage festival. And
I'm jealous.
I know, he was awesome. I still
was
see
he gracious?
His grin.
Was
he
beautiful?
Right. Yeah, he was just, it was a piece that I loved. It was called Whale, and it was a duo, and each letter had its own pitch and sound. So, so we would just read it like that, and guess what we sounded like? You know, we sounded like whales, and it was,
oh, wow.
I dug it. And so I came back. I actually got a degree in education. I got my master's degree at Lesley College after that, teaching through the arts. So I had this educational degree and this voice, and I came back and taught music in the public schools. As far as this work, I was always isolated. You know, sing for grandma, that line from Chorus Line, sing for grandma, sing for grandma. It's kind of like people always say, you're the singer, I'm not. And I hear this a lot. And as we do this work, I'm noticing that it's kind of like people don't want to own their own diva. It's just too much. It's that, you know, your brilliance is too much for you. So they put it on celebrities. They put it on other people. They put it on the people that are singers. And it's kind of lonely. Like, sometimes you don't want to get up and da-da-da-da-da, you know, and be that. You just don't. And I didn't know what I was missing. And then I went out you know, a long story, but I went out to Seattle and started doing youth work with a camp there called Power of Hope. And I was the singing teacher, and I started learning about this group singing philosophy where you're a social artist bringing people together. That's what I learned, the definition of social artist. Used to be just being a person, but now we're all isolated and we need the art of bringing people together. And so singing is awesome. Singing is direct from the heart. There's no, when it's done right, you can just fall into each other. You don't need to know anything about those people. You just breathe and sing a song together. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been missing. This company, this harmony. I saw the movie 20 Feet from Stardom, and I watched that movie so many times because it says in there are people that that get a physical rush off harmony. And that's me. I've always loved that. I've always loved dissonance, what's called dissonance, you know, and just leaning into that and feeling that buzz. And that's something we offer. We offer this place where singers, you know, and singers, I'm telling you, I call them self-identified singers, have more hang-ups about their voice than the people who say they can't sing sometimes. I teach at Santa Fe University for art and design, and I have vocal students, and they come in with a whole set of beliefs. I'm this, I'm not this, I have this problem, blah, 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 blah. And it's not true. It's they're making it true, you know, with their beliefs. So if you come in, this is our big, and the more we do this work, the more I realize it's about the physical sensation, trading your beliefs for curiosity. What's going on in my body right now? Look at this instrument. It's, you can't hear yourself first off. I mean, you can when we're recorded, but when you're singing, if you focus on the listening to yourself, that's when the judgment kicks in. That's when it's like, I sound bad. Everybody's looking at me. I can't sing in front of people. But then if you go, wow, feel that buzz. That's wild. Listen to that. Feel that in my head. And this, Angela's so great at this. She's like a little kid. I love it. She's like, oh, Amy, I got this metaphor. You know, it's a bellows and we do this and we do that. And that enthusiasm and that like honest sort of taking in of sensation, the irony is you sound better when you do that. If you listen to the room and feel your own voice instead of trying to hear your own voice and make judgments. So, yeah. And it's funny, a few times people have come in that think they're all that, you know, they've bought the diva thing and they come in as, yeah, I'll give this a shot, you know, and immediately they realize this was before you came in, this one man who shall remain nameless, who has CDs out and yada, yada, comes in and struts in like he's going to show what's what.
He's a vocalist.
Yeah. He's, you know, recording artist, da, da, da. And he came in and it was, you know, I got to give it to him. He stayed the whole time, but it was not that. It was, we're all making this thing together, this vibration, really, this buzz of community and song. And he got into it. He didn't come back. But, you know, I don't believe, I'm in a band now where I'm up front, you know, I'm in the Sticky, this funk band where I'm right up front. And people come at me with a lot to say. And I don't believe the good stuff. I don't believe the bad stuff. It's about how did it feel to me, in myself, in my body. So that's from the singer, quote unquote, perspective.
I love that as you're talking about that, the dogs start barking.
I know, they're like, oh.
Exactly. Like, hear my voice.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's funny that you said I'm like a kid, because that's I think, part of what is the good, the healthy balance between the two of us and how we come at this and what our relationship is with our voice. Because where Amy's like the seasoned, studied vet, I'm like the kid in my voice. And when I was a kid, I sang all the time. I remember, I have this really, really clear memory of riding my bike. I was probably about 10, and just riding my bike up and down my street. They called it a court, you know, I guess like a cul-de-sac. And I remember the moon was rising, and it was a big harvest moon. And I remember just doing laps around and around and around the court and just singing to the moon. And like, I'm getting overwhelmed talking about it because it was such a beautiful personal experience that I was having with my voice and listening and just responding to what I was seeing. And just, I loved singing. And as a child, I wasn't really considered a great singer. I had a sister who it was like, oh, what a beautiful voice you have, Anna. You know, nobody said that to me. But I was, you know, I had special parts in our choir stuff. And, you know, I had a nice kid's voice. But it all kind of started to come tumbling down for me when the musical Annie got popular. And this girl in my school who was really shy, all of a sudden.
Really shy?
She was. It was just like, cool. So, everybody just like, our jaws just dropped and our eyes popped out of our head because all of a sudden she started belting Tomorrow and sounded just like Little Orphan Annie. And I remember feeling like all of a sudden now I was comparing what I could do or what I couldn't do to what she could do. And it started that whole dialogue inside me of, oh, I guess I don't have it, whatever it is. I decided I didn't have it. I'm not that. I'm not a singer. I can't sing like that. And after that, it was like for the next probably more than 30 years of my life, I believed that I couldn't sing.
Meanwhile, you are a professional percussionist.
Yeah, and a pianist. And I've made my living making music. I managed to teach elementary music and not sing, which was a huge disservice to those kids. Terrible. But, I mean, I did other good stuff. We played a lot of instruments and we danced a lot. And they seemed to like it. A lot of those kids grew up to be musicians. But I avoided singing at all costs. And then just after I moved to Santa Fe, just barely would get into situations where I would have to sing a little bit. And I'd just be like, oh, God, okay. I hate this.
What are situations where you have to sing?
Well, I got a job at the Cathedral School, which is where the New Mexico School for the Arts is now. It used to be the Cathedral School. And when I first moved here, I was the music teacher there. And part of my responsibility was to teach those kids the music for Mass, to get them ready to sing the songs in Mass. And so I had to, if there was a song they didn't know, I had to sing it. Usually I would just kind of start it, and once they would go, I would just quit and let them take over. Another situation where I had to sing was a band that I was playing in, and I had managed to not sing for quite a while in that band, and then we lost one of the singers, and I was expected to take up some of the parts, and so I was like singing into a microphone and not liking that at all. But I did it because I had to, you know, and I didn't really, because I'd never really studied singing and because I hadn't done it for so long, I think I probably wasn't using my body in the best way possible. And you know, the way that you treat an instrument is going to affect the way that it sounds. The more you care for it, the more you warm it up, the more you keep it in tune and in shape. And it's just like any instrument. I mean, if you have a piano sitting in your house that nobody's played for 50 years and nobody's tuned, and, you know, nobody's going to want to play a concert on that. And it's the same with our voice. And so if we don't care for it or don't know how to, that's a lot of people just don't understand how. And I think I didn't really understand how. And so when I did sing, I was just kind of like making sound that I thought needed to be made, but it wasn't like I knew a lot about, that I knew really anything about what was supposed to be happening in my body and how I could make that sound its best in my instrument. And so when I met my husband, he sang all the time. He still does. He would like pull me close to him and make up some song in my ear. Or he'd just like burst into song in the grocery store, and all of a sudden he would like get babies to stop crying by walking up to them and singing to them. And the moms would just be wide eyed and smiling. And I'd just kind of be standing there going, yeah, that's what he does. Sometimes people would join in with him and I would get real shy and I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. And people would jump in and sing a harmony. And I didn't feel comfortable doing that unless somebody said specifically, here, try this note, sing this note. And then I could do it. Then I met Amy. We met at Candyman, and she liked my clothes. I made a shirt out of some tights, and she was like, "Ooh, I want to know that girl."
I said, "There's something up with this one."
So she called me one day, and she said, "You know, I just would love to have some tea with you and just get to know you better." And so we went over to Annapurna. That's kind of like our office. We went over there, and we talked for a really long time. And it turned out we have a lot of similarities in our ideas of the role of music and the power of that to bring people together and our role within that as musicians and facilitators and people who, social artists, people who love to just bring people together and watch people bloom through expressive arts, you know. So she asked me if I would help her lead this choir. And ironically, or maybe not ironically, maybe this is the beauty of all of it, was like maybe a couple weeks or so before this happened, I had made a list of some resolutions, and one of them was play with my voice more. I didn't even really know exactly what that meant. I knew I wanted to just let go of, like, it's not so serious. It's okay. You could just play. And just laugh. I have this like real freedom when I laugh. And I thought, well, how come I can laugh like that? But then when I try to put a word to it and direct it in a certain way, it just doesn't come out. It doesn't feel as easy and free. So then here comes Amy saying, direct this choir with me. So we started doing that together. And I started learning. She's been doing this for so long. She's like, she knows how the instrument works. And so I started being able to improve and take care of my instrument and build my skills. And then also for me, one of the really fun parts was just to go, oh my gosh, I can go start learning these songs. And I would just like hours just dig around online and find songs and learn them and then bring them back. Because that's something I've always done. I learn music and then I can teach it to other people. It just so happens that now I'm doing it with my voice. And now I'm learning how to use my voice and doing improvisation and singing harmonies. And what I said before about I didn't feel comfortable and safe unless someone told me, sing this note and you can sing this harmony. That's exactly what we do with people. So we'll teach a part. Everybody will sing the part. And then we'll teach another part that can go with it. And everybody sings that part. And then we'll teach maybe a third part. And everybody sings that part. Because we're all transsectional.
That's our favorite word, transsectional.
We move around within all the parts. And then we just say, well, which one feels the best in your body and which one feels good for you to sing? And then we split up and we put all those parts together. And the more that I've done that, I have noticed one of the things that I'm so happy with and so proud of myself is that that's different now. Like I can hear something and just like sing something that goes along with it. Not just copy the notes that I hear already being sung. I can make my own. And that's something that I could do on an instrument before, but I didn't know how to use my own voice instrument well enough to do that. And so I come from this perspective of the kid, of the person who didn't know how to do it or didn't believe that I could do it, and then relearning how to do it. So when the two of us teach together, that's one of the reasons why I'm like so into all the different analogies is because I'm feeling this in my body for really the first time. And she's going on with something that she's always known was there. So the two of us can give people completely different perspectives. And I think that helps kind of fill out the whole picture, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just about getting out of your way and having a good time. The jamming part is the fun part for me. Like I could sing songs and I come from an improvisational background, but there's something about Angela, like we would be toning or doing a full on improv in choir and she would just go nuts. Like she'd go higher and lower than any humanly possible sound, you know, and modeling just the play. And just that little bit in the choir kept me going so that, who was it? Somebody called us to do something for Wise Fool where we just spontaneously made songs for a performance and jumping in and knowing that that's going to, not only is it going to be sound good, which actually is, it's funny. It's low on my list now, sounding good. Cause that kind of takes care of itself. If all the other things are in place, if we just are in the moment and we're listening and we make this awesome, fun jam.
Right. Like the real beauty is in, is your sound honest?
Yeah.
Not,
yeah.
Is and it perfect?
Yeah. When I started the choir, there were people from legit, I'm doing air quotes a lot, which probably don't work on the radio. I'll say air quote. But, you know, legit choirs that heard anyone could join, so it must not sound good. Somebody told me that. And I learned from Siobhan Robinson and Dennis Donnelly. They have a choir in Victoria, BC, and it's called the Getting Higher Choir, and there's about 350 people in it. And they started a whole community choir training. There's a couple people in town that have taken that. And they said that if it's from the heart and you're breathing, it always sounds good, and it's kind of true. They also told me that tone deafness is a myth. That
I
that
totally
is something,
yeah.
Yes, and that it's really an ear thing and a breath thing, and you can work through anybody's air quote tone deafness. So, you know, the fear, but there's nothing that people fear more. You know, public speaking is supposed to be the biggest fear. It's singing in front of other people. And the teens that I work with, they say, I can't sing in front of other people when I invite them to this group singing. I said, that's fine. We're not in front of each other. We're with each other.
Yeah.
It's this whole separation performance thing attached to singing.
When you're talking, it reminds me of something that doesn't at first maybe seem relevant, but you know, there's a lot of people who are trying to look good and they're like really doing excessive amounts of personal grooming. But when somebody's happy, they look good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you got to do a little bit of personal grooming, but
well, it's like after dance class when we do a lot of Nia, and after dance class, I feel so beautiful.
Yeah.
After dance class, and I'm sweaty and stinky, and whatever I had makeup on, I had is running, and my hair's all wonk. But it's an inside thing, and there are those moments in choir where we just hit this. You know, we worked really hard, and we got this song down, and it just happened. And that moment, I know there must be a word in another language. That moment after the song happened, and that ring before any other sounds made. That is worth it. That's the thing. We all look at each other and went, oh, that
just
happened.
That
just happened.
Right.
And it's a feeling. It's very difficult to explain. You have to, it's like, how do you explain how it feels to dance with other people? How do you explain that? It's that same thing. It's this little piece in you that you didn't even know you missed until you do it.
Well, there's a lot of analogies to dancing too, because I mean, Lord knows there's lots of technique to learn, and it's great to go to dance class and learn technique when you're young. But there's all of this, like for me, having grown up studying classical ballet up to a point and not no further than that point, but still it was pretty intense. There's so much kind of learned, like culturally learned self-abuse. Like you see, you know, you go, everybody goes across the floor in either individually or in groups in dance class. And if you don't do it perfectly, you see these girls, or at least back when I was young, I don't know what it's like now, going, oh, you know, because they missed it. And you can see their like little tense self-chastising gestures, which they didn't do before they went to dance class. They learned that self-chastising in dance class. And then, like, how do you get to the place where you're free dancing? Like, you have to almost go to a different genre of dancing.
Yeah, it's
like
exactly
for me, it was salsa.
It's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been in the conservatory system. It's amazing I still like to sing, actually. and it's because I found the rebels and the people that were doing the alternative stuff. But it's almost a power trip. It's like we have to control this life force, and we're going to make it do these scales, and we're going to make it be perfect, which never happens. So yeah, it's a setup, totally. And most people just opt out. They don't even take the challenge. And then, you know, it is funny when I work with singers from that system, and their mind is kind of blown. They're like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, and I give them the note, but it's more of a sinking in acceptance. Like, we don't read anything in our choir. There's no visual part of the brain being used. And that was a conscious decision. Different choir,
except for the fact that we kind of take our hand and we show the contour. Like if the note goes up,
right,
our hand will move up, and if it goes down, our hand will come down. If it stays the same, we'll do that.
But there's no paper.
But, yeah.
And for example, my mother comes every week, which is kind of a trip. She
great.
Comes. It's awesome,
and she's really getting so good at holding her own parts.
Yes.
And She used to be so scared. She would stand right next to me and just be like, I can't sing this unless Angela's singing
yes.
it next to me.
And, yes, and she did not like the fact that we did not hand out papers with at least the lyrics, because that's how she was used to getting her information. And now, you know, she's been doing it for a couple of years, and she's, you know, it's the way that you take it in. It's call and response and repetition. So we don't do super long pieces. We can do sections of different things or chants and rounds, and they're from all over the world. But these are power songs. Some songs we do are, used in Revolution. There's, you know, there's songs. It's an energy that we, I believe, need in the world right now, like right this minute. So we'll transmit them orally and orally, and they take them in. And I always see, you know, like when you describe that little girl, I didn't get it right. And that fear is so programmed because all the people in our choir are adults, and they have had that self-check happening all the time. And to try to get rid of that and say, look, I'll try it. What did you say? Everything's hard until it's easy. John Rangel.
I've been, he said that in some kids shows we did recently, and I've been using that a lot. So thank you, John.
Local musician.
And it's so true because, you know, Angela more often than I offers these kind of challenges, you know, let's push this a little, let's keep going. And I can see the wave of, oh, I can hear it too. They all go, oh, we're never going to get, oh my God.
What, you want me to clap my hands at the same time?
Yeah, and move and da-da-da. So, and just getting that residue of I can't, I'm setting myself up for failure. That's the biggest challenge for me. And also to get people to trust that they know it in the moment and not wait for one of us to do it. So there's always these challenges, and they're soft. It's a soft place, a sweet place for people to go there. And it's very tender.
Can I add something to that? Do you mind? Because two things I was thinking about. One is that, you know, talking about the idea of let's take this a little deeper, let's dig in a little more. That's part of my musical personality coming into it. Like, I love that challenge of let's take this a little bit deeper. Let's clean up the rhythms. So we have that opportunity. It's not like a bunch of people just singing whatever. Like, we'll get things like nice and tight, even though we're just standing in a circle singing for ourselves. But to be able to do that and to create something together and say, wow, that was really good, you know, and how can we make this even better is really cool. But on the other hand, when you're talking about the chastising ourselves and judging that, I think a lot of that has to do with whether we're regarding what we're doing as the feeling from within, or if we're doing it from how does this look from to somebody else from outside of me. And I personally feel like that's one of the most important things that you and I do, Amy, is that you have done for me, is that I have reestablished a relationship with my own voice, and whether I choose to share it with people in public is something completely aside. But the fact that I sing, that I sing now, who cares where it is? I'm in the shower, I'm in my car, I'm walking down the street, or I'm standing in a group with other people, or I'm in the cathedral, or in Carnegie Hall, or
with your band,
or with my band, singing. Or singing a solo, or whatever. All of those are completely different relationships that I can have. And the most important of all those relationships is how I am personally in that sound. And there's been so many studies and so much work done showing how important that relationship with our voice is to our health, to our mental health, our physical health, our spiritual health. And, you know, one of the best ways to calm our nervous system down if we're feeling anxious or in a flight or fight cycle is to hum. That triggers the vagal nerve. And that's one of the best ways to do it, is to just go within yourself and just start, you know, just start to hum with your mouth closed and feel that inside your body. To me, that's the most important. And it's when you have that relationship that those judgments don't mean anything, because it's just you with your own instrument. It's not about what does that person think of the sound that I just made.
We're talking to Angela Gabriel and Amy Lindquist of Seventh Wave Community Singers. And something that the way you're talking reminds me of something else that has been coming up in conversation both on the radio and off, which is that if we're going to survive this period of environmental destruction that we've created for ourselves through an excess of greed and individualism, we got to do things together. And doing things together is you know, there's a lot of ways to do things together, but what it sounds like, and I haven't been to your classes, but it sounds like emotions like selfishness and competition and ego might come up, but they might also dissolve when you're singing in a group of people that's structured the way you guys are doing it.
It comes up a lot, and it also diffuses. Comes up and diffuses in the song. I mean, the thing about songs is they have their own life, and they transcend a bunch of our chatty brain stuff. Like, there are songs in the American South that were in black and white communities that couldn't stand each other, but the songs moved back and forth.
Yeah.
And so they have their own healing stuff going on. There's this, I don't know if you've seen the movie Amandla about South Africa through the musicians. It's amazing. And there was a thing that they did called the tui tui, and they used it as a weapon, and it was a sound. It was a group sound and a group move. And in that film, there were the police talking about it like it was scary to them. It was a thing, you know, and I've seen it. There are women that come to our, you know, it's mostly women right now. There's some men coming, but it's very healing for them to just be somewhere where they don't have to explain what they're going through. One woman in our group said that her husband had died. None of us knew this. And that this one song we sang kept her going. She'd sing it all day. And she didn't have to go into it. It wasn't a therapy session. It was like a place to go and be nourished and not have to talk, just be with each other.
So the upcoming workshop on the 14th of May is called So You Think You Can't Sing. And apparently some of the people who get the most out of this workshop are people who think they can sing, who are professional or advanced, quote-unquote, amateur singers. So it's like the whole range of people are invited to this and could find it fruitful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We're going to do all kinds of, there's how to breathe, how to, you know, something that Angela's turned me on to is the mimicry aspect of it, which is really interesting because as soon as people say, oh, you want me to sing, you know, that kind of thing. But can you go, hey there, that's a melodic arc.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that, so we ease into it. And as somebody who's sung for my whole life, I find it interesting. I find it different. I find it like refreshing. There are not enough opportunities to sing together, no matter how much you consider yourself a singer. So, you know, I want to sing as much as I can with as many people as I can and in as many different ways as I can.
Now, all of this is happening at the Nia studio here in Santa Fe, and Nia is a form of dance. Are there connections between what you guys are doing with your voices and what the Nia folks are doing with their bodies?
I feel there's more potential than there is connection right now, and that's part of why I'm so excited that we're doing this, not only this workshop, but that six-week series as well at Studio Nia, because they're, the way that it's approached is very similar in how we do it, and there's some vocalizing in Nia, and there's some movement in our classes, but I feel like if we could create a bridge between our two communities, like I personally get more out of my Nia classes now that I feel like I'm comfortable with my voice. I use my voice more in that class. I'm not just going, huh, huh, which is a lot of the sounds that are made there. And I'm not trying to, you know, say there's anything wrong with that sound. It's just one option. And so now I find myself being as creative with my voice in there as I am with my body. And so the more Nia people we have coming to sing with us, then they bring that, what they get from it, they can take their voice back into the Nia classes and they can express with their voice in that way. And then also Amy and I both got to go to this really cool workshop, Kivo, Kinetic Voice, which I'm actually doing training for. I'm in the process of training to be a facilitator for that. And this was also at the Studio Nia, and it was beautiful because there were a lot of people there from the Nia community, and it did kind of cross over into more movement and vocalizing at the same time. Not quite songs. We do songs. So we kind of take it even one step further. So what I think is going to be really exciting is to see what happens when people from the Nia community go through the singing experience with us and then take what they learned back into the Nia experience and find themselves transformed by it.
Yeah. And it's the same instrument. It's our bodies. It's our sensation.
Yeah.
You know, their language is really, you know, get into your sensation. And that's what we say too. And it's good, whatever comes out. So they are similar.
Mm-hmm. Angela Gabriel and Amy Lindquist are co-directors of Seventh Wave Community Singers. They're on the web at seventhwavesingers.com. And the seven is the number seven. Seventhwavesingers.com. You can probably Google it and find it one way or another. I'll link to it also on santafe.radiocafe.org. And all the different events are on there. And there's a great quote from Ella Fitzgerald that says, "The only thing better than singing is more singing.
Mm-hmm. Word.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us in the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's always so much fun to get to come and talk to you.
Likewise.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.